Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Laura Spencer. Who says documentaries have to be stuffy? Not the organizers of the True False Film Festival. It has a reputation as a premier documentary showcase in a festive atmosphere in Columbia, Missouri. And this is the 10th year for the festival, which begins on Thursday. Our guest is David Wilson. He's the co-founder of the True False Film Fest, and I caught up with him yesterday by phone in Columbia, Missouri, as volunteers were digging out, cleaning snow from around the venues. How do you all plan as a film festival for inclement weather?
We do a lot of planning, and this is certainly the kind of, like, I don't want to call it the worst case scenario because it's not, and hopefully it won't be, but, it's a tough one. And every situation is a little different. I mean, a few years ago, there was a huge snowstorm in New York. Columbia was fine. Columbia was beautiful. But it sent our travel and hospitality team into a just complete nonstop 24-hour on two different phone lines and the computer rebooking flights because most of our guests fly from or through New York. So this year we have snow on the ground in Columbia, and it's impacting our production team. The team that sets up venues, that brings in chairs and risers, that builds out the sound system, the projection system, that does all the decorations and the art, now they're having to slog through 4-inch slush puddles. So it's a challenge, but we have an amazing volunteer squad. Our volunteer director, who spent last night in a hotel room in downtown Columbia instead of going home, so she knew she'd be downtown, put out an email just saying, hey, who wants to help shovel snow? And rather than get a lot of, like, that's not what I signed up for or whatever responses, she just got a ton of people saying, great, let me know when you need me. I'll be there.
This film festival is now in its 10th year, and I wonder if I could have you talk a little bit about its history. I know that the idea kind of hatched in the 90s before the beginning of the film festival, and I wonder if you can kind of take us back to the sort of beginning conversations.
Well, sure. In the 90s, I started with Paul Sturtz, something called the Ragtag Film Series, which was a sporadic film series. We showed work on 16mm at the Blue Note, a great music club here in Columbia. And we sort of built a reputation for good programming, for fun events, and we built a lot of community support. And so Ragtag was able to become a theater in 2000. That was a big step for us. We had a 35mm projector. We were showing first-run, foreign, art house, independent films. And we really didn't think we needed to do a festival. We thought that was providing what our community needed most in terms of film. But around 2003, Paul and I saw that there was a new breed of nonfiction film coming out. They were cinematic. They had big characters and stories. They were well shot and put together. They felt like movies. And we thought that there wasn't really a festival that we knew of that was celebrating and supporting that kind of filmmaking in a really strong way. So we started to talk about what a festival might look like and how we might tie together some of the venues we had been using. Ragtag, which was a very small little storefront theater, the Blue Note, and the Palatial Missouri Theater, and make that into a footprint for a festival.
Could you talk a little bit more about the focus of the film festival? You talked about nonfiction films, but the whole kind of identity of the film festival with True False in its title, sort of blurring the idea of fiction or nonfiction storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, I think alongside that idea of very cinematic work is the sort of reveal that these films are constructed. Whether it's a recreation, whether it's whatever decision you're making. I think it was, Godard said, every cut is a lie. I mean, it's from the beginning, all of these films that we call documentaries are constructed films. So we felt like it was okay to put that forward right in the title of the festival, that no film is entirely fiction, no film is entirely fact, that all films exist somewhere in between. And so we wanted to sort of challenge our audience, not in like a kind of like silly, like, can you guess if it's real or not, but in the way that like media literacy makes us all think critically about what we watch.
Well, could you talk about your role as the programmer of the film festival? You keep the number of films screened fairly small, and I mean, it is over 4 days, but this year it's 37 films and also three programs of shorts. But could you talk about your kind of curatorial process?
Yeah, we are very picky, and myself and Paul, along with our associate programmer, Chris Bachman, watch hundreds of movies. We now have a team of screeners who give first watches to things as they come in. So this year we had over 1,100 submissions. Plus, the three of us are going out to festivals, scouting films, and watching stuff all around the world. So we're trying to cast as wide a net as possible. we're not particularly concerned with whether something is a premiere or how much it's been out there. We really want to bring new things to our audience and show them the best that the documentary world has to offer.
And some film festivals have gained a reputation as a marketplace for movies for sale or as a way to draw attention to movies that don't have a big marketing budget. And where do you think that True False falls in that realm?
Well, I do hope that we can bring attention to the movies we show, and that's something that we've actually spent a lot of time recently thinking about, how we can better serve films year-round, how True False can be part of their entree to the world. But we're very clear also that we're not a marketplace, that we're not aimed at the industry. Filmmakers don't come here and do days of press interviews. There aren't late-night bargaining sessions in condos, you know, over whether a film's going to sell for $1 million or $2 million. We really try to let other fests do those things and let True False really be a place where filmmakers get to watch each other's work, where they get to interact directly with an audience, and where the ideas behind the films can move to the front.
One of the aspects of your film festival is the secret screenings. And in this age of Twitter and Facebook with instant communication, it seems like it would be a challenge to keep that information secret. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about kind of the idea behind that and how you've made that work in keeping critics to their word that they wouldn't review the film until it's had its official premiere.
Right. I mean, it's a tricky thing, and it's sort of an improbable thing in some ways, but it works in a lot of ways the same way the rest of True False works, which is putting a certain amount of faith in our audience and our community and saying, look, you know, if you want these things to continue, this is the deal, these are the rules. And if you don't, that's fine. You know, you can get your one tweet out and you know, be a Twitter hero, or you could post your review early or whatever, but in doing so, you know that you're jeopardizing it, you know, for yourself and for everyone else in the future. So people seem to respect that. They get that this is something that makes True False special, and they want to see it continue.
Well, you mentioned earlier the Blue Note, and that is a venue, one of the venues where films are screened in Colombia. And could you talk about the role of some of those venues? Some of them aren't often used for films, except for in this instance.
Right. Almost all other venues are not usually used for films. Yeah, I mean, it was vitally important to us at the beginning and still is that the fest have a walkable footprint. That I think that action of moving from venue to venue, of being around people like that, is part of what makes it feel like a festival. And so there weren't any movie theaters in downtown Columbia other than ours, and so we knew we'd have to build out venues. And so it's been a process year by year of finding spaces, of figuring out what they needed to become a functioning venue. We have very, very high technical standards and an amazing tech team. And so when we decide to do it, we know we're going to do it in a way that, you know, any filmmaker could walk in and be proud that their film is showing in this environment. But we do a lot of work to make sure all these venues meet those standards.
The population of Columbia, Missouri is about 100,000. And in its first year, True False brought in about 4,200 people. But last year, it was 38,000. And I'm just wondering or curious what kind of impact that has on the city. And if you think there's going to be a point when the film festival might outgrow Columbia.
I think it will, because I think we're very aware of the size of True False and the sort of right size, and we're approaching that. You know, there'll be some interesting challenges as we strive to keep it affordable and accessible and, you know, and still watch the popularity grow. But I think that from all accounts, from the downtown merchants, from the hotels, the restaurants, they really like True False. There's something in the flow of True False that gets people, you know, they go see a movie and then they go eat. You know, they'll watch a few movies and they'll be snacking in between. They're staying in hotels. And, you know, they're documentary film fans. They're not exactly like storming downtown, drunkenly smashing windows or anything. So it feels to be a pretty good fit with downtown Columbia. And certainly the support we've seen from Columbia makes us feel like we're doing something right.
One thing that I've read a lot about, critics have remarked on when they've come to visit, is that there's a very... Their films are very important, but there's also a very festival environment. And one of the things I've heard a lot about are the buskers who perform before the films and at different parties, but also before the March, a parade that you have.
Yeah, I mean, we have really at this point, I think, infused the whole fest with music to the point where it's, you know, almost as much a music fest as a film fest. From our very early days with Ragtag, we asked a local high school kid we knew who played the accordion to come play outside the theater. and kind of, you know, create that festive spirit. We want to make things that are events that feel unique and special, and if you're not there in the moment, you're not going to have that experience. And so having the live music at the screenings is a big part of that, and we've just gone on from there. Like, you know, there's a lot of trial and error early on. We discovered that many musicians do not respond well when you ask them to walk into a venue, set up, start playing to an empty house, and as soon as the house gets full, to get off stage. It's sort of counterintuitive for musicians. So finding the right kind of musicians, finding buskers who could handle that environment, and then giving them the showcases throughout the day and at night to let them, you know, do full sets and really show off their work, seems to have kind of struck a nice balance. And it's now just part of True False. I mean, there's bands that come back every year. There's bands that people look forward to coming back every year. This year, we're bringing back a group who haven't been here in a while, but we love dearly. They're called Mukapatsa, and they're a 40-piece circus punk marching band from Chicago who will be leading the March March this year.
And the March March is a parade that, you know, folks can dress up, they can march, but it sounds like it's festival attendees as well as the community of Columbia.
You know, there's actually not very many things at the festival that are truly suitable for a six-year-old, but the March March is. So we invite people to come down. We invite everybody to join us. The idea is to be a participatory parade, to kind of come together and walk down the street together and celebrate documentary film, celebrate Columbia, and the start of a great weekend.
Some film festivals around the country are competitive, and True False is non-competitive, but you all do give out an award called the True Vision Award. And could you talk a little bit about the filmmakers who will be recognized this year?
The True Vision Award is a mid-career award. It's not a competitive award, but we look for a filmmaker with a certain body of work and really filmmakers who we think are truly creatively advancing what nonfiction film and filmmaking can be. And I think we've found a great, great candidates this year. Lucien Casting Taylor and Verena Paravel are a pair of filmmakers who haven't made that many films, but they started something called the Sensory Ethnography Lab at Harvard. And they're really pushing forward new ideas about to kind of bring documentary film and ethnography back together in a way. They were together at the very beginning of documentary, and they sort of went their own ways. And now they're coming back together, and they're putting a real emphasis on observation, on sound, on a kind of an immersive experience that isn't narrated or dictated, but places you in an environment in a way that transmits what it actually feels like to be in that environment. And to do that, to actually create that effect, you have to take a lot of creative liberties. You have to really push your cinematography, push your sound gathering, make creative choices that may not necessarily be, as Werner Herzog likes to say, the reality of accountants, the truth of accountants, but it's the truth of poets. So I think that Lucien and Verena are doing tremendously creative work in nonfiction filmmaking, and it's a real honor to give them the award this year.
As part of the award, you also will screen one or more of their films, is that right? Or this year, is it their film Leviathan?
That's right. They have a new film called Leviathan, which is about being on a commercial fishing boat off the coast of Massachusetts. And it plays sort of like a horror film, but there's, you know, there's not a lot of plot, but the general feeling is one of the waves crashing and the sound booming and seagulls circling, and it has a certain horrific feeling to it. And we'll also be showing Lucien's previous film, which is called Sweetgrass, which is about a almost obsolete sheep drive in northern Idaho. And it's sort of told from a sheep's eye view, and it's also just a tremendously creative and inspiring movie.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other films that we'll be screening this year. And one in particular, Zero Dark Thirty, has been in the news a lot. Catherine Bigelow's look at the hunt for Osama bin Laden. And there's a film called Manhunt, Greg Barker's taking a look at the behind the scenes of the researchers who were in pursuit of Osama bin Laden. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that film and conversations that might ensue contrasting that to Catherine Bigelow's work.
A really interesting pairing, and I actually think there's another film we're showing called Dirty Wars, which looks at JSOC, the Joint Special Operating Command, and it's sort of a detective story about figuring out what was really going on in Afghanistan and some of these secret military operations. But Manhunt foregrounds these information specialists, these CIA researchers who don't go in the field, who stay in their offices in Virginia, and spent really, I mean, even more than in Zero Dark Thirty, spent the last 20 years piecing together and figuring out who bin Laden was and what he was up to. They were the people, they were the first, you know, people in the United States to ever probably hear the words or say the words Al-Qaeda. They had different names for that organization as it evolved, and then at some point it became Al-Qaeda. And interestingly, this group is almost all women. They seem to gravitate towards the work. And so Manhunt really gives them their day, I think. And it's a fascinating story. It's a complicated story. It touches on a lot of the same debates that are going on around Zero Dark Thirty. There's a whole debate within the film about torture versus enhanced interrogation versus what's acceptable versus what's useful. And so I think it's a great companion film, but it certainly stands on its own.
And another film, These Birds Walk, is set in an orphanage in Pakistan. It's a film that True False helped workshop. Could you talk about that process and how you work with some filmmakers to help them develop their work?
Yeah, it's a really satisfying, although, you know, infrequent process. But that film came to us a year ago sort of as an unfinished film. And we saw a ton of potential. We're really excited about what the filmmakers were doing. And so we set up a work-in-progress screening where the filmmakers could show a sort of semi-complete version of the film and then talk about it with an audience, get feedback. We tend to seed the audience at those things with other filmmakers, with knowledgeable people, and really try to help the filmmakers get a sense of what the audience is seeing. Because often you get so far down the rabbit hole as a filmmaker that you have no idea what other people are actually seeing in your film. You know too much. You know too much of the backstory. So they took that and they went back into the edit room for a year and came out with something which is, you know, not entirely different, but certainly a lot of changes, a lot of differences, and I think the resulting work is a tremendous film. So it's not always the case. Even in the past when we've done works in progress, we don't always bring back the finished film. But in this case, it seemed to make perfect sense, and it's a film I'm really, really proud that we have here at the festival.
Well, the festival officially kicks off with the film Stories We Tell, directed by Sarah Polley.
We're off. In the beginning, the end. I am unique. From that precise moment when I was dragged out of my mother's womb into this cold world, I was complete. An amalgam of the DNA passed on to me by my mother and father.
She's going to be in attendance at the film festival, is that right?
Well, I learned actually this morning that she's not going to be here. Her father, who actually figures prominently in the film, is really sick and is in the hospital. Her family, who the film is about, are sort of gathered around him at the hospital. So Sarah will have to, she'll Skype in for a Q&A on Friday night, but we won't have her in person. So, you know, it's something that we're sad about, but it's much more important that she be with her father. The film is one of my favorites of the year. It's, I think, a kind of filmmaking that I love, which is sort of smaller stories, not the big, broad political stories, but really intimate, personal stories. And she not only has a fantastic personal story to tell, but she tells it so skillfully. I mean, in a way that, like, I couldn't believe this was her first documentary. I mean, and I think that it's the fact that she's made two fiction features that kind of gave her the tools and the knowledge and the confidence to tell the story in this way. But it's a really wonderful, sad, sweet, funny, moving story. I think it's a film we're going to be hearing a lot about in the coming year.
As you look ahead, are there certain things that you anticipate doing more of in the future or less of? You talked about kind of being at a comfortable size for the film festival, but I'm just kind of curious what kind of things you all are looking ahead to as you kind of plan out maybe for your next decade.
Yeah, you know, I think that we, the stuff that we're most interested or excited in planning has to do with things like our educational outreach efforts. We're doing a lot more with high school students. We've built this True-False Academy and a True-False Boot Camp and these ways to get high school students excited about documentary filmmaking in kind of a year-round way. I mentioned doing more year-round support of our filmmakers as well, just really building that kind of effort and that, you know, marketing, social media, whatever it is we can do to help filmmakers all year round, not just at the fest. So those are the kinds of things I think that will sort of deepen what the fest does. I don't think we're looking to broaden what the fest does. I don't think we're looking, we'll never be a 10-day long festival. We'll never be a marketplace or all these things. I mean, those are things that are well accounted for in the world of festivals. So I think we can find ways to deepen the impact of the things we already do, but not necessarily make the festival bigger. I think I said this a little bit, but in terms of, you know, the snow and today and just thinking about what we've built in 10 years, the thing that far and away strikes me the most are the ways in which the fest has served as a spark. And it has really ignited, you know, creative passions in a lot of people in Colombia and elsewhere who make artwork, who do design. And even if they're not doing creative things, they're going to be out there today shoveling snow. But all of that effort, all of that energy comes from a community that wants something to happen. And, you know, having been able to help provide the spark for that is very exciting.
That was David Wilson, True-False Film Fest director and co-founder. True-False kicks off Thursday night and runs through Sunday in Columbia, Missouri. Our up-to-date film reviewer, Cynthia Haynes, will be attending the True-False Film Festival, and she'll give listeners a rundown on up-to-date, and that's on Friday, March 8th. Part of every True-False Fest, as we talked about, is music before each film. Let's listen to just a bit of Cindy Wolf and Mark Bilya and their song, Handsome Molly. Our guest this hour, David Wilson from the True-False Film Fest. It kicks off Thursday night and runs through Sunday in Columbia. Earlier in the hour, we were joined in the studios by Keith Davis, Senior Curator of Photography at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. The exhibition Invented Worlds, Photographs by Ruth Thorne Thompson, continues through July 28th in the Block Building at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. You can subscribe to Central Standards Podcast, listen to this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows on the Central Standard page at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore a new violence prevention program in Kansas City. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Stay with us for Up to Date and the return of the DVD gurus. I'm Laura Spencer, and this is Central Standard.
If Mary, that I would be your man.